Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kaylin Carr. Yes, sir, Kaylin, it's a good thing you're wearing that Austin FC. How you celebrating, man? First win, first goals, big Diego Fagundes hive guy? Or
it's my boyhood club, so you got to respect
it. Kaylin, what's your favorite color?
You give me free gear, I'm repping. Yeah, but good week for it.
Kaylin, what's your favorite color?
Oh, I'm still orange, man, always.
Come on now. I thought you were
saying
verde.
You're not verde?
Yeah, come on now.
Nah, forever orange, man. Come on.
Big weekend for Austin FC. Their first ever win in Major League Soccer, but come on. This weekend's all about Chicharito, Chicharito, Chicharito. I said it three times. That's how many goals he scored. He now has five on the season. That's one less than the points that the LA Galaxy have. It's got off to a flying start. Is it sustainable, both the goals for Chicharito and their success? We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about David Ochoa, who is all up in the brains of every Loons fan, every member of that coaching staff, every player on the field, certainly Adrian Heath. The Loons, I don't know where they end up in the power rankings, but they're currently number one and the most likely to insist we should all live by the unwritten rules of baseball rankings. So congratulations to you, Adrian Heath, for being atop that list. It's just a good thing we don't have the crybaby rankings. You might be there as well.
Come on. I had zero problem with what Adrian Heath said. Zero problems.
Okay. All right. We're going to talk about it. We're going to have fun with it, which we always do with Minnesota United. You know, it's not personal, guys. We're just out here trying to sell houses on MLS.com. Power rankings, by the way, those do come out on Tuesday. We have a reaction show, Doyle and I do, at 11 a.m. Eastern. It's going to be on my Twitter handle on Twitter Spaces. We get a bunch of guests from all throughout the league. We might have to get somebody from RSL on and somebody from Minnesota just to hash this thing out. But tune in at 11 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Also, the Cade Cowell era is here. So that's good news. He was the youngest starter in the league last weekend and this weekend. Had a goal, had an assist, looked the part. By the way, the Higuain brothers had a nice day too. They got some revenge for that Union mockery from last year. And we'll also talk CCL quarterfinals. MLSsoccer.com. Of course, call up has Johnny Russell this week, so go check that one out. Steve Zakuani has your Saturday takeaways every single week, and you can get the Armchair Analyst as well. And Instant Replay is out too. All right, let's get into it here. First, a shout out to our fantasy winner, Defend the Shield. He's a Philly fan, obviously. 105 points holding off. It's going to get messy by just 1 point. Defend the Shield had Cade Cowell on his bench, got moved in. Great move from him. I had Cade Cowell starting last weekend. I lost the faith, took Cade Cowell out of my team, kicking myself now. So it is what it is. Only 50 points was I behind Defend the Shield this week. So it can only get better for me. Let's get into it, guys. Sunday, one game, Red Bulls, LA Galaxy. Could Chicharito continue on? Could he somehow outdo what he did against Inter Miami? I don't think he did so in the post-game interview, but three goals. Come on, man. 5-2 games. I mean, he had two all of last year. We made fun of Doyle for taking Chicharito in the Golden Boot draft. Like, we groaned. We thought that was an awful take, Kaylin.
Rebecca thought so as well. She's like, Doyle, don't act like you knew what was going to happen.
If you're not watching on YouTube,
don't lie to them. You have no idea. Moment. You guessed.
Kaylin, we missed you last week.
Yeah.
So tell me what you think of the Chicharito experience.
This feels quick because we were doing the preseason rankings and predictions, and I did my top five number nines in the league. Chicharito was not on the list. And we were talking, and when we were doing them, like, all right, how long before somebody has to come back and be like, all right, I hold my hand up. It was a mistake. It was quicker than expected for me. I'm like, okay, here we go. Best top number nine in the league in the power rankings. But no, I mean, you could see the weight come off him that first match and against Miami. And then you could see it again. And I think like confidence for a striker shows up in a bunch of different ways. And for me, in his case, it comes with optimism, because some of those plays that he's making are just plays where he's moving and he's being optimistic that the ball is going to appear to him, or he's going to find it. And that's a type of confidence that doesn't really show up as far as maybe your first touch, which has also looked good for him, or his just energy. Like he was once he got one going, then suddenly his movement when the ball went wide, he was constantly a problem. We could talk about Red Bull back line of three center backs. It just created so many different gaps for Chicharito that was really difficult for them. But yeah, he just had that confidence of getting to the right place, the right time, same thing where the deflection comes to him. That's not an accident. You know, that I think Long gets his feet caught a little bit and takes a small deflection, but Chicharito's right there and ready to react because he's anticipating that the ball might come to him and he's ready for it when it does. So, that was my big takeaway is for him is he just looks completely reinvigorated. It sounds like for him, he's been very honest about it being off the field, on the field. I kept thinking of I don't know, just like the reaction to him. And I think the way people are rooting for him when they were fully against him and seemed to really enjoy his fall last season. But this is a story I think people can really get behind. And Galaxy's 6 points. I was really skeptical because no Pavone. I was like, Chicharito needs service. And I was like, how are they going to get the ball to him? And I think Victor Vasquez, we saw his quality on that ball that he played into Chicharito. And then there's this other X factor of Chicharito just finding the ball. He doesn't necessarily need perfect service. When he's confident, he just is able to sniff out chances. And even that first one where it's like, it's a tough angle. And maybe last year he misses that one. I mean, he was missing much easier chances than that. But it was a tight angle. But when you're confident, you can see the difference it makes where that one falls, then the next. So he's on a roll.
You just need Ethan Zubak, man. Hey, Ethan, even if you don't put the ball on frame, man, Chicharito is going to be right there to put it in. Do you want to gloat here? Do you want to analyze the Galaxy? I mean, this is definitely not what anyone expected. It might have been what people hoped for. I definitely hope for it. The narrative is just running strong right now. The return to El Tri, the Gold Cup into World Cup qualifying, where Jimenez doesn't come back in time. He can compete with Henry Martin or you know, certainly the other players that have there. He's Chicharito. I mean, this is what I think, like, certainly MLS HQ had hoped for from the jump for Chicharito.
We're going to have to put a moratorium on the word narrative, I think, because at this point, it's just analysis, right? Like, what is he doing well? What is happening for the Galaxy that wasn't happening last year? And I think Kalen's right that, like, Chicharito's movement is crisper. More optimistic is a good way of putting it, just that belief that you're going to that the ball's going to find you. But the other thing that movement does is it puts pressure on opposing back lines to always be aware of him. And we saw that, especially in the first half, his movement was occupying two of those three center backs. And then with Victor Vasquez, he loves to drop off that line and back to the left. So he loves to create those left side overloads. Villafania would come up and engage Velo, who was the right wing back for the Red Bulls. And then you would have Zubak and Vasquez out there as well. So suddenly a 3v1. Well, then you're bringing another central midfielder, and you're bringing Aaron Long up there as well. If you look at that second goal, Long is 45 yards upfield. He's not playing like a center back. So they were able to sort of scramble the Red Bulls. And the genesis of that isn't just having Victor Vasquez in central midfield and a very good left back like Jorge Villafania getting up on the overload. It's Chicharito being in these guys' heads. And then as they react to that scramble upfield, he's just brilliant at finding space. He's just brilliant. And this is what I wrote about in my column today, is that for every great center forward, their underlying superpower is the ability to get into valuable spaces, the ability to know where that is. We've seen it from Wando for a dozen years now, seen it on the highest level from guys like Robert Lewandowski. Like, what is Robert Lewandowski absolutely amazing at? Like, he's really great at a lot of things. What he's absolutely amazing at is being in the right spots. That's always been Chicharito's superpower too. And he's shown it now in two games, and it has this knock-on effect of making everybody around him in that attack better. And the question for the Galaxy is, can he also somehow make that defense better? Because it hasn't been great through two games, and it hasn't been great on that back line, or in defensive midfield, but They're the only team in the league with 6 points through two games. It is a dream start to the Greg Vanney era. They are playing some Greg Vanney soccer very clearly in terms of setting tempo, even against the Red Bulls, which is usually impossible. And Chicharito, I guess it goes back to the word narrative, Weeby. Like, you got to be a happy man. Light up that shrine.
Hell
start
yeah.
praying.
But you mentioned, Doyle, there was a segment, I think it was leading into the second goal, where they dominated possession and it fell into like a lower tempo MLS game, which versus the Red Bulls and the way Gerhard Stuber wanted to play seemed like it'd be impossible this year. And it led to Vasquez having the time and space to clip that ball over the top. And I think for Vasquez, what's been important is we always knew what he could do on the ball. I don't think there was questions that he lost that. It was, are they going to be so overloaded in midfield that you can't play him? Right. That hasn't been the case two games in. Now, I have to say personally, I didn't pick either of the teams they've beaten to make the playoffs this year. So it's been a great start, but it I don't think we're in like, yeah, let's talk about them as the best team in the West yet.
No.
Which is fine. And I would say to Kalen, Kalen talked about his first finish, the third finish for Chicharito is that's his peak. Because as Doyle mentioned, his superpower is getting in good spots and finishing. And that is above his head. He gets up, he hits it. He wouldn't have even gone up for it last year. Like, physically, he wouldn't have even tried it.
Well, he wouldn't have even been on the field.
Yeah, fair. So that's the point he's reached this year, which is huge. And I think for this group, the narrative is so important. God. But I just think you have a new coach. How did you get better from last year? How are you improving? And whether they have or haven't, which they have, 6 points in 2 weeks gives you some breathing space to figure it out now. We talked about it with Armas winning for TFC and CCL. Like, whatever's happening now, that gave him some time and I think took some pressure off, and now it's the same for the Galaxy.
I didn't have any doubts that Greg Vanney would be able to go in there and earn the respect, earn the belief of those guys. But when you hear Chicharito talk about the coaching staff afterwards, those are sort of the warm and fuzzies that just have not been there with the LA Galaxy the last couple of years. Nope. I mean, nowhere close. We didn't hear any of that sort of thing about Guillermo Bresciolotto and the job that was being done. You didn't have Zlatan certainly coming out and saying those things. You didn't have your superstar sort of being like, I don't really want to talk about me right now. Let's talk about the other guys and what they're doing. Hey, look at Sasha Kljestan's finish in week one. Like, it feels a little bit like, you know, like the perfect Petri dish for the Galaxy to try to get back to where that they want to be. Chicharito said it. We still believe we're the biggest club in MLS. We have to prove that. But there feels like a little bit of a cohesion in the group and just straight up belief. It's exciting to be back there.
The people want to know, do you still think the Galaxy are the biggest club in MLS?
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm so
probably.
Right now.
Probably, yes. Who would be bigger than them? I don't know.
They're the biggest club in their own city. I mean, if you look at their... at LAFC and what they're doing, they're still a far better team. If you look at this Galaxy team, even still, like, they're far better. Well, I mean, we'll get to see it in a couple of weeks, which now this actually feels like will add some intrigue to the whole thing. Especially,
oh, yeah.
And we don't know where Vela's at, and hopefully he's back and healthy. And we don't, same with Rossi. But I just, you know, the Galaxy still have some issues. Their back line, I think, still has some question marks. I think they've improved in net, but they're playing a lot of young players too that are still trying to figure it out, having a little bit of a learning curve, even when you look at the depth pieces that they're bringing in. So a lot of very young players. Efrakim did a good job, Dunbar as well, but when you get to the bigger matches, when you get to the more difficult games, like, it's good that they're bleeding in some young players, and we've seen Vanney do a really good job of that with some young guys in Toronto in the past, but I still think there's a gulf there, and the fact is they needed two from Chicharito the first match, they needed three the next one, and I feel like they really do emotionally lean on him and his positivity. And I've been on teams where you feed the number nine, he gets going, and everybody gets a little bit of life off that. But I do wonder if it's great for right now, but I still think there's a pretty big gap between, you know, them and 6 points top of the table right now and the best teams in the West, most notably LAFC.
There's a difference between being the best team and being the biggest club. That's what I would say. In no way am I arguing the LA Galaxy are the best.
Weeby's a Manchester United fan.
I'm telling you in worldwide terms and in MLS terms in this country, the club that people are going to know first over all the others is the LA Galaxy. And that's what this signing was about. Chicharito was about returning them to a place where not only could they be that club in perception, but also perhaps in reality. And even more so, that's what Greg Vanney was about. Was about building.
Chicharito does that internationally. Sky Sports asked me first about Phil Neville today.
That's true.
That's the biggest club in MLS.
Phil Neville had a really good weekend.
Yeah, we have the perfect measurement.
Yeah.
This is a new segment every Monday. Kalen Carr comes on. What did Sky Sports ask you about?
It's going to be a lot of Phil Neville.
Constant Phil Neville. We'll get to Phil Neville. Let's take just real quick a look back on our Golden Boot draft. Doyle, you got the lead right now. Diego Rossi hasn't even played, and you are plus three goals on all of us. Dave, you're second. Rui Diaz got his two. You still got Carlos Vela sitting back in the cut, so you got two goals. I got my one. Robert Berich did his thing. Jossie Zardes might have been a poor pick given Nations League and Gold Cup, and maybe I'm regretting that one a little bit. And Kalen, apologies to you, but they haven't got firing yet. Pink-haired Joseph and bleached Alan Pulido have zero goals.
Everyone knows so Kalen takes the first 6 months off, comes in, doesn't care about supporters' shield.
It's that old Dynamo culture, yeah, man. Exactly. Just gotta show up for the stretch run.
Let's go.
Everyone will burn out in the heat in the summer, and then he'll get some good fall results and go into the playoffs.
No, we.
Anybody have thoughts on Red Bulls before we move on here?
I would not want to be a right wing back or a right back under Gerhard Stuber. It's like defense against the dark arts right now.
Well, I thought everyone just
gets pulled. No, Gutman left back.
Yeah, Gutman was great, but right back, right
wing. He was going to sub below like 25 minutes in, then didn't. Then Duncan, who got pulled after last game, gets sent back on. It seems like no one wants to play that position.
Struber's coached three games, and he's used three different formations from the start. It was a 4-2-3-1 last year in the playoffs, a 4-4-2 diamond last weekend, 3-5-2 in the first half of this one. They switched back to the diamond in the second half, and I thought, generally speaking, they were better, but like this is a roster and a team that's very much under construction. I don't think we'll have a good idea of what they are until like June at the earliest.
Yeah, I don't understand playing Aaron Long on the right side of the three. He's your best center back. Play him, put him in the middle, most experienced. I understand he's good on the ball and you want to use him in possession or building out, but put him in the middle, allow him to orchestrate from there. I don't think the three-back system is really going to work for them. I understand because they want to get Gutman and their outside backs a little bit more advanced, but just did not work. The press at times did. And then also I thought Frankie Amaya came in and he's going to, I think we were seeing a little bit more of him and how he might fit into that system.
Oh yeah.
He played deep, dropped off and was able to really facilitate, but then also got isolated a couple times, almost drew a penalty, which to me looked iffy. I'll leave that up to Andrew and I think Charlie on You Make the Call or whatever. But
wow, couldn't even give Instant Replay its proper respect.
Instant Replay, yeah.
Wow, just slagging us.
I haven't been on Twitter in a while, but but I think there's a lot of positive pieces at the Red Bull. I like the moves and some of the signings that they brought in the offseason, but they haven't quite figured out. Struber, I don't think, has figured out how best to use everybody yet.
You have a young DP coming in that's not there yet, and Patrick Kumala. You have Frankie that just got there, a packed midfield, a bunch of signings from last year, 12 signings this offseason, work in progress, in flux. I think those are good ways to describe the Rebel right now. No wins so far. Probably no panic, but we shall see. All right, let's talk about it. David Ochoa. This took MLS Twitter by storm on Saturday night. I mean, this is... I don't know what the right adjective to describe this is. I mean, I was going to say fun, potentially frustrating, depending on your point of view, certainly dramatic, certainly petty. I'll walk you through the whole situation if you missed it. Just real quick, bear with me, Doyle, then I'll let you have your say here. RSL didn't play week one. RSL go to Minnesota. Minnesota lost 4-0 to Seattle in week one. So Minnesota has their home opener against the team that we all basically said – you know, and take analysis in MLS and preseason with a grain of salt that we said was going to be at the bottom of the West and probably at the bottom of the standings overall. Two goals for RSL, a comeback goal for Minnesota, RSL win. David Ochoa, who took some shtick from fans per all reports throughout the game. Remember, there are not full capacity in stadiums, so David Ochoa is not dealing with a lot of like white noise here. He can hear what's being said behind him. In the past, if you know Minnesota United fans, or Minnesota Thunder fans or whatever it might have been in a past iteration of the NHL, they were known for doing opposition research on their goalkeepers, opposing goalkeepers, and heckling extremely effectively said goalkeepers. My expectation is they probably were heckling David Ochoa throughout this match, and David Ochoa gave it back. You know, the Chase Gasper incident?
It was, you're the other Ochoa, and you're not as good as the other Ochoa in goal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like when I played against New England, they would generally not have the hugest crowd, and you could hear specific things from fans on the sideline. And whereas like Seattle, you can't hear, you can't even hear the person next to you. But it was worse. It was worse when you can hear specific comments from supporters.
Do you remember any in particular that just really hit you in the core?
I think it was mostly just cheap helmet jokes, but but yeah, when you hear it personally, you're like, oh man, that's tough to swallow.
Anyway, David Ochoa has been known in USL and at other levels to be a bit of a, you were talking about the dark arts there, Dave. He has a little bit of that in him. He's willing to mix it up a little bit.
He has a lot of that in him.
To waste a little time. You saw it with the Chase Gasper incident at the end where he goes down, he's holding his ribs. Chase Gasper barely touched him. And at the end of this game, when RSL won, David Ochoa turned around and booted the ball into the Wonder Wall. And Minnesota United were not happy about it, including Ochoa's U23 teammate. Dotson came over and was pushing him. The whole team was there. Adrian Heath came steaming out of the box. And after the game, Adrian Heath had this to say. Anders, cue it up.
No, the goalkeeper just turned around and booted the ball in our fans and towards our supporters, which is a no-no. We all know that. He's got some edge on him for a kid who's not that good. So,
he quick dropped that one on David Ochoa. A lot of emotions running high here. Freddy Juarez was asked about that comment in his post-game press conference. He was kind of like, hey, we support David. We know he has growth with him, but we think he's a really great player. We stand behind him. I'm not going to comment on what other people say. It's the heat of the moment, post-game, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the long and the short of it. Doyle, I didn't experience this one live. I had the joy of going back and combing through all the Twitter conversation and the plays. Give me your take on everything that happened here. Who were the villains? What roles did people play? Who was in the right? Who was in the wrong? Was anybody in any of those places, or was this just pure petty dramatic fun?
Pure petty dramatic fun. Nobody was in the wrong. Almost everybody was in the right. Ochoa, on top of likely being heckled for the entire game, this was his first ever win as an MLS goalkeeper. He's only played one other game before, the last game of last season. They lost that one. This is his first game since that colossal error in CONCACAF Olympic qualifying. Getting the win in this one was, I'm sure, a just massive relief. He might have punted the ball into the stands anyway. Like there didn't have to be any heckling. Like you're going to celebrate something like that. And I loved to see his emotion in celebrating it. And then the afters were hilarious. And Adrian Heath is completely within his rights to burn the kid post game. Because right now, David Ochoa is not that good. We saw the error against Honduras in Olympic qualifying, and we saw throughout Olympic qualifying, while he's a very good shot stopper, he's questionable with his feet, and he's prone to bobbling a catch. Like he bobbles the ball a lot. Happened twice in this game. Minnesota were not on their toes, and they did not burn him. They did not punish him for either of those drops. So he has to get better. But he's a talented 20-year-old goalkeeper getting his first win. So it was awesome. Minnesota United fans in my Twitter mentioned specifically complaining about Ochoa punting the ball into the stands, saying somebody could have gotten hurt. That team took 23 shots. Two were on goal. If you think punting the ball into the stands is going to hurt somebody, have a chat with your forwards. Because that, through two games, that is the story for Minnesota United. And we should be talking about that and not this post-game BS. Because of all the teams that we thought were pretty, pretty good to start this year, it's Minnesota United who've had the worst start. And that's been overshadowed.
I mean, look, they did come out. The players did came out and really defended their fans. It's a shame they didn't defend much of anything especially on the break in this game. They gave two goals to RSL. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, this was like a Mourinho moment for Adrian Heath. It was a deflect moment. So instead of all of us talking about, as you said, how Minnesota United was this much fancied team who have spent big on Reynoso and who went out and got Juan Chope and then went out and got another big forward from Ligue 1, before this game, we're talking about David Ochoa kicking a ball high up into the stands instead of two losses in two games, and there being real uncertainty about what Minnesota United are doing and whether it's going to be effective. Like, in some ways, it's brilliant.
The good news for Ochoa is I think their next three matches are at home. So he's going to have – but I don't think he's done himself any favors, because if you're an opposing supporters group and you're coming to the next match, he basically told on himself that him. You're going to get – like, you can get in my head. Like, and I'm going to be playing – I'm not only playing against the 11 men on the pitch, I'm playing against y'all behind me too. And that's what supporters thrive on. They want to get a piece of that. That's from what they're behind the goal for.
From everything I've heard about Ochoa, that's what he wants. he has potential to be the biggest villain in this league since Steven Lennart. Wow. Just beloved by his home fans and just loathed everywhere else in the league.
His reaction to the Minnesota goal was like, try and get the ball so they don't chase it out. Then it gets knocked out of his hand, just goes down, grabs a body part, covers his face. The whole thing's going on, and he was kind of doing it throughout. Although, I still don't see as much malice as everyone's trying to give. Like, it's the end of a game. He already had it in his hands. No. The ref blows the whistle. He's going to punt it. You're just signing the ball and loft into the crowd like Roger Federer. It's just you're trying to keep everyone engaged.
No.
This is entertainment.
I can't.
Back, he's trying
I
to
cannot,
be a part of it.
I can't back this.
I lofted clip to the top of the Wonderwall.
I'm trying to think of like Real Salt Lake players in the past, like Beckerman. I mean, they've got some epic trash talkers in their club's history. Players that will get in your face, get in your ear, whatever it is throughout the whole match. And I think that his reaction after the match was deserved, right? You see him pumping his fist. He's jacked up. If you want to go even, I know goalkeepers, as game ended, walk right by me and make sure that you hear them celebrate or you can see it. And I think that's all fair game. Once you start kicking the ball in the crowd, you start doing things like that, now suddenly the conversation's around you as opposed to the team's win. I don't think it's a good sign. I think it's a young goalkeeper. Obviously goalkeepers are wired different, we all know that. But I can't say that it's if he has ambitions of being a big time goalkeeper in this league, as well as he's already represented that.
I want him to do it after the next road game. I would love to see him do it after the next road game.
Do you think that
this is like a WWE character now? Just like
Kalen's about to write about why he doesn't want to go to Disney World anymore.
I mean, somebody
that's the same energy
you're
bringing here.
I didn't realize that John Terry was on extra time now, and the way the game should be played. Yeah. God, I will say this for Minnesota: it's been bad the first two games. A lot of the things you mentioned haven't been there. Ramon Abila doesn't dress for this game. Adrian Hunu, who's in his prime DP striker from Ligue 1, isn't even here yet. And DeBossi hasn't been available for them as their starting center back. That's not even talking about Ike, because we're not really going to talk about him for a while now. So this is a group that it's been really bad in these first two games. But a lot of the pieces that you talked about and a lot of the hype hasn't been around. So the question I think now is, can they keep themselves from sinking into something before they're all available? Because if they're negative 15 goal differential, everyone's losing their minds and they have no support and there's no culture around the team by the time these guys get in, that's the real fear for them. But otherwise, I still think you look at this game, if they had a true center forward that they spent a lot of money on, they'd be creating more chances and they'd have more opportunities.
I think Minnesota's going to be fine, to be honest with you. I think, though, through two games, my biggest takeaway with them is just the lack of on-the-ball dynamism from their wingers. And if you go back and you look at that stretch run and then into the playoffs, Babello was the best player, the key to it, but, like, Kevin Molino was amazing. He was amazing. And like Ethan Finley is a really good winger. Robin Lud, I think, is a very good winger. Different types of guys. Like Finley just wants to run in behind, take one or two touches. He's not going to beat anybody off the dribble. Lud doesn't have that type of pace. They miss the ability to just eliminate defenders on the ball that Kevin Molino had. And they're going to, if they're going to make the type of run this year that they made last year, I think that is going to be the biggest thing that they have to figure out. But overall, Minnesota's fine. They're still going to be a solid playoff team this year, unless there are injuries or something goes spectacularly wrong.
Franco Fragopane continues to be a name linked with them. Cincinnati got jumped into that, but now that seems more like probably an agent play in some way than anything else to try to drive it up, as he was scoring goals in Argentina. Of course, they went and got how do you fit all these players on the field? Like, you got
maybe
Abula,
two forwards.
So it's two forwards, and then what?
Maybe it might be two forwards and Bebello in like a 4-3-1-2. You know, because you could play like the 4-3-1-2. You put, you know, Will Trapp in the middle, and then Gregus and Dotson on either side of him, or Ozzie in the middle and Gregus and Dotson on the other side. Like, you have those types of guys. And then does it relegate the likes of Lud and Finley and Justin McMaster, who I think has been pretty good through two games? Does it relegate them to like bench roles or second half change the formation type of thing? Yeah. But like, that's the way it is now in MLS. Good teams have depth. Good teams have flexibility and the ability to change shape. But I'm not betting that they're going to change away from the 4-2-3-1, because we saw how effective that was for them last year. But it does seem like they're edging towards having real flexibility in personnel formation and even tactical approach.
But besides depth, one of the things that's changed is like, one, I don't know that they were sure they were going to get Hunu done, and so you have a chance to bring Ramon Abula in, but it's on loan. So that's not your guy. That's not the guy you have to ride by. And the other thing is, he's 31. He didn't start week one. He's not even available week two. So you don't know how often you're even going to have both of them as an option. Right now, they take any of them just to put someone in there that's not Swags. Shout out to Swags, legend. So, I don't know that it has to change, because this is one of the things we talk about. How does Kevin Molino fit into Columbus? He's not even available. And now Zardes might be gone for how long for national team and all this stuff. Like, these are the things you need to be able to compete in MLS week in and week out.
RSL, people didn't believe in him. We were among those people. I mean, in a lot of ways, rightfully so. The club is in a place where there's a lot of uncertainty.
Can we just leave it at it was a really good week one? RSL had a lot of fun. Congrats to being back in the season. They got stuck with a bye week one in MLS. They get a win. They get a big two goals from the guy they brought in on loan, their biggest addition. Awesome start for RSL. Looking forward to seeing it as we roll on.
So I will just end it on this. I think there's a little bit of like mind games masterclass from Adrian Heath and all that post-game stuff to sort of shift the conversation, because you guys are right. This is not the complete team. They don't need to be talking about how poor it's been so far. If they can kind of kick that can down the road and get players back, they may never need to have that conversation. The flip side is, this is perfect for RSL. They didn't even get a week one. They had nothing to talk about because they weren't playing. Now they have headline news. Like, this is the sort of thing, if you're a sports fan in Utah, you see this and you're like, screw those guys in Minnesota. This is our squad. David Ochoa is our guy. This is our team. We're back, baby, RSL. So, yeah, we'll see.
Do you feel a rivalry brewing?
I don't know, man. Do we got a little Sporting Kansas City RSL stuff here? I don't know what happened in preseason. Maybe they were kicking each other in preseason if they played. No idea. But this is how some of that little on-field stuff gets started. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Austin FC or Higuain Brothers? What do you think? What's the bigger story?
Let's go with Austin FC first. Because this is their first ever win. And it, most weeks that would lead the show. But with Chicharito scoring a hat trick and David Ochoa going supernova, we bumped it down to third. Austin FC played really good soccer against Colorado. And it was born of this sort of commitment to positional play from Josh Wolf. And it has played out exactly like we thought it would, exactly like we described last week, where like it's I don't want to say rigid, but it's all very scripted. And the good thing about having a script where, you know, if the ball is here and the run is over here, I'm making a run over here or moving. Like, it ends up looking very, very fluid very quickly, as long as everybody's on the same page. And in this game, in the second half, everybody in Austin was on the same page, and they just ripped Colorado apart. They were able to send so many runners into the box, creating all types of angles, creating all types of chances, and eventually creating three goals that were all, frankly, really well deserved. And they did it without Thomas Pochettino. It was impressive as hell.
And Rodney Reddes and Matt Beisler.
Yeah.
And I think Beisler's a big one because he's supposed to be the one with good feet in the back who's kind of making everything work. And Cascante had a tough preseason and has had kind of a tough MLS career in general. You didn't really see it. And I'd say, to the point of the scripting and the confidence in the system, I wouldn't say they were bad, but it was a tough first half for them. And Colorado pressed them pretty hard in the first 20 minutes. And Austin didn't really have a ton of possession and openings. And they kept going and kept going and kept going. And it all broke for them as the game went along, which for a team that's 2 weeks into their existence is awesome. And Diego Fagundes is the man in Austin now. This is the team he'll always be associated to for the rest of his life, which is amazing.
I remember watching like 17-year-old Diego score at Red Bull Arena many, many moons ago. By the way, Matt Beisler not in this game because of the birth of his third child. So congratulations to him from the dad hive. Pochettino is an interesting one. We don't know why he was in this game. Apparently something to do with his registration. We'll have to follow that story a little more closely. Kalen, you're wearing the hat. You got the cap on. You're Verde. You got the tree emblazoned on your forehead here. What does a win like this mean for a new team? And what did you see in this game?
Well, it's huge. And I think part of it is revealed. The Fagundes one was interesting to me too, because it's exactly the type of profile of a guy that you want to go out and see that is in one place, but isn't playing, but is still young with a lot of experience and a lot of quality. And he looked good even just outside of the goal. And I knew this Austin team under Wolf was going to be good with the ball. The teams he's been a part of, the systems that he was going to implement, and you could see some of the players he was bringing in, but they're actually better than I expected without the ball so far. They're able to turn over and press in certain points. The Fagundes, he actually makes a play to turn over the ball, I believe on the second goal, where he turns it over. Yep. And they kind of go right down their throat. So they're able to press and pick their moments at times to be pretty good without the ball. But so it was impressive. And for an expansion team, you need a little bit of belief and to say that, okay, this is working. We get a win. And you know, I think they have that now, because it's one thing if you have a system that you're implementing throughout preseason, you don't really know what it's going to look like when you start going against in meaningful matches. But now you say, okay, well, these patterns are working. They're able to kind of like, especially with they kind of tuck in and get in those sort of in between spaces, and we're able to drive directly at the back line and then find space on the width and then crash the box. So, but it gives them some belief. I think that will take Wolf and his system into the next match.
You see with Danny Pereira, right? He's a rookie, did not look like a rookie. Mm-hmm. Hasn't the first two games, but especially in this game, which, can I take this over to the other side, which is Kellen Acosta's not a left back. None of them are central midfielders without him. Like, you can't tell me not having a left back is worse than not having central midfield and coverage there. And it's been brutal to watch for two games. And it's like, call up Kalen and have him play there. It's left back for essential midfield. Like, the entire game is being lost there. And I know Abubakar is out and they've got other pieces missing along the back line. They don't really have a backup left back coming into the season. I guess Betashore is out as well. But it just feels like throw someone out there and see what happens rather than annihilate your own midfield. And Kellen now has a terrible start to the season, and Nomley's had a bad start to the season, and Rubio's had a bad start to the season, all because of this. It's been like this whole cascading effect.
The effect being from Kellen Acosta playing a left back. Look, some concern for Colorado, 1 point through two games. They're one of those teams that we looked at in the preseason, looked at results and said, we're really hopeful here. This could be a really, really good team. There are still question marks for them, and those question marks haven't gone away so far. Congratulations, though, to Austin. Congratulations, too, to you, Matt Doyle, and to David Goss. Two goals for you guys, the opener for Doyle, the second goal for Goss.
I had a goal and an assist.
That's true.
So I was more
you could have added a third, too.
Yeah.
You didn't quite get that header on frame.
Show-off-y.
Have you two thought about, like, you know, once you get that double vax life, going down to Miami and seeing if you can get into any clubs or anything. Yeah. Try that.
I think I would need about a quintuple vax to go to Miami right now.
Anyway, Inter Miami won their first game of the season, 2-1 in Philly. Revenge for the Higuain brothers against the Union. Certainly for Gonzalo, who got the Fortnite dance in the face from Jacob Glessness last year when he skied a PK in his very first MLS game. Phil Neville was jacked about it. Sky Sports was jacked about it. You know those highlights were playing. I mean, this was a nice win for them. You can't put it any other way. To go to Philly, the Supporters Shield defenders, a team that has looked very, very good this year and has a big opportunity this week in CONCACAF Champions League. Like, these are the moments as we talk about belief and as we talk about sort of building something from the beginning for Phil Neville to look around the locker room and nod, and for the locker room to look back at him and say, okay, we're on to something. This is working.
And you had pieces, I think, of guys who were part of the struggles last year. I think this is the best game I've ever seen Figal play.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
And yeah. But like guys like that, where it's like, yeah, it'll get better. It'll get easier. Credit to Phil Neville, who struggled with subs in game one to be super aggressive and bring on Jay Chapman, which helps lead to that second goal and brings myself on as well a little bit later on to make things happen.
So wait, I'm going to interrupt you right there. What is the difference in this team when it's Pipa playing as a number 10 as opposed to Rodolfo Pizarro? And that is the thing that I think we're going to have to tease apart over the course of this year, because Pipa's a real 10. He, like, his skill set and his ability to find space amplifies the skills of everybody around him. It's always done that in MLS, you know, going back 8-9 years now. Pizarro is wonderful on the ball. And I thought he was really, really good last week, but and you've talked about it a ton, David. Like, he's never been the type of guy who knits an entire team together. And to me, what was missing in that first hour was that. And the difference in the last half hour was Pipa's ability to not just arrange his team with the ball, but to kind of break the diamond apart a little bit by taking up really good spaces and getting, you know, in the periphery of like Jose Martinez, or getting just over the shoulder of Ale Bedoya. I think that's something that we're going to have to, like, I'm actually going to go back and watch that second half again after this show, because I want to have a better grasp on what changed, particularly with that sub.
For the last 4 years, I think it's been Pipa Higuain can't play 90, but every team that he plays for is better when he's on the field. Yep. And it was the case for DC, and it was the case for Columbus at the end too. But it's also why you've probably constructed your roster poorly, because you need someone who can give you a full amount of minutes to do the things he does. And that's not taking it away from him. Like, he's phenomenal. And he's, as you said, he's a genius. I've seen when you go see him play live, the way he covers ground sideline to sideline to find the ball, I've never seen anyone in MLS do it like he does. And he doesn't care if he gets it or not. Like, he knows what he's doing to the other team's shape, whether he touches the ball or not. So it's awesome to see. And Weeby narrative, man. Gonzalo Higuain's got 2 goals in 2 games.
I know.
He's bad.
I know. Look, he had it in him the whole time. One of my favorite moments of the season so far is the two brothers trying to find each other in the pile to celebrate. Like, after Federico scores that goal, Gonzalo's like digging through the guys on top of him. He's like, this is my brother, man. Like, I should be the first one to be here. Another thing I noticed from this game, and honestly the last game too, Robbie Robinson looks much better. But Gonzalo Higuain's body language in regards to Robbie Robinson not passing him the ball is incredible. They could be on the other side of a 10-foot wall, and Gonzalo would be like, you didn't see me, man. What the hell? Like, I'm right here. Pass me the ball. There was the instance where he went off the bar with it. There's 3 guys in the way, Gonzalo. There's no passing lane. Robbie can't find you. Let him take the shot on. He almost scored. And he's just not having it. He's like, no. My feet. Every time, Robbie. If you don't know that, you don't understand the way this team works. Congratulations.
Kalen was like that with Kwatemic. Kalen was like, how are you not passing me the ball? You're Kwatemic blonde. I'm Kalen Carr.
Yeah.
So exactly. Kalen was more like this. Flew all the hair back first and then said it.
I know you see me. The hair's bouncing around, Kwa. Come on, man. Come on.
Kalen, you feel when you watch TFC now and Jaden Nelson's doing it with the hair, do you feel like maybe you're watching yourself a little bit? Do you forget sometimes?
Is he from Brampton?
I don't know if that's his. He's a Toronto guy. Anyways. Let me get it for you.
No, but they, I do think that that is a little bit of an issue between them, and not just from the standpoint of the body language part, but just finding a way for those two to connect. Because and it goes back to the conversation of Pipa or
Pizarro.
Yeah, where you're like. Pizarro, I think, fits better with Robinson because he's a guy that's going to drive and he likes the ball at his feet and then is going to slip players in and use their mobility around them. But whereas Pipa is more going to, like, you know, find the soft spots and then try and find, you know, early curling balls in. So I just think, I don't know, just the pieces of the way the roster is set up still don't quite always fit. And Robinson and Higuain don't seem to connect so much where they're playing Robinson more as a winger, or I feel like he's not necessarily like a left winger. He wants to run at guys face up and find the ball in like a Jordan Morris type way. We've seen him play that role. It just hasn't quite looked right yet. So
I thought the idea would be have him come in as a second forward off the wing. Cause Lewis Morgan's the production down the right and you're getting width from the fullbacks. I don't know that they've looked, well, I guess in the first game against the Galaxy, they did get a bunch of space for Jovan Jones to get into. Less in this game because you're on the road against Philly. You don't have that much of the ball. You're turning it over every other second because while they did win 2-1, they didn't look great throughout this game. No. They didn't create a ton of opportunities.
So it's weird. I thought they looked better in the first hour against the Galaxy and then bad in the last half hour. And this one, they looked kind of bad in the first hour and then pretty good in the last half hour because it could have been 3-1. Andre Blake had to make this spectacular late save. Just an epic save. For Philly, that wasn't a great final 30 minutes. And I think that Jim Curtin has probably already watched it three times and is probably figuring out what's going wrong. But to me, it's more like they had so much of the ball in the first hour and they created – they weren't necessarily creating a ton of chances, but they were getting into good spots, and then the final ball just wasn't there. They got to figure that out.
You know when you watch a guy and you're like, not productive, but I don't care. I'd pay to watch this guy every day. Sergio Santos is on that list for me. Like, he's awesome. He's aggressive. Pretty much rarely comes to anything, and I'm like, I'm here for it all day, Sergio. Also, Kalen, Jaden Nelson, TFC website, says hometown Brampton.
I knew it.
I mean, match made in heaven. Match made in heaven. We'll talk more about the Union. We hit the CCL previews here in just a little bit. We have to get our 2,222 player of the weekend. It is Cade Cowell. Got the little outside of the boot assist. Big 3-1 win for San Jose against Dallas. He had just an absolute filthy, filthy goal. Look, Matt Hedges, who I put in my early running for Defender of the Year, got Rito Ziegler on this play. Like, he's going the opposite. I mean, he doesn't know where he's going. The feints from Cade Cowell, the footwork is incredible. It makes you think about what Wando's been saying for basically a year and a half now, which is that the kid is built different. Week one was not a shining moment for either the Quakes or Cade Cowell, but this is more of sort of seeing the potential for him.
What is he,
17? He's 17. Yeah, so. He's younger than Caden Clark. I mean, it's incredible. Somebody threw the stat out there. I can't remember, but like in 2026, those guys are going to be 23 and 22. Or something like that. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Doyle, I shouted him out in my column. I know that you were pushing Cade Cowell as well and really watching him closely. What did you see in this match from him?
Well, I picked him to win 22 under 22.
Fine, whatever
on this
it was.
Show.
Whatever that was.
In our preview, I said he was going to win 22 under 22. The thing with Cade Cowell in the DA and then even last year when he started getting some real minutes for San Jose, he as a youth player, he was a goal machine. Last year, even when playing on the wing, I don't want to say he only had eyes for the goal, but he was kind of locked in on getting into the final third, specifically getting into the box and being goal dangerous. That pass blew my mind. That is a full, like, that is, he was damn near at a full sprint, and his full sprint is really fast. This is like a Jordan Morris level athlete here. And he hit an outside of the boot, inch perfect through ball that cut five defenders out of the play and gave his star winger a one-on-one with the keeper. That, like, I have never seen, the only U.S. men's soccer player I've seen hit that pass is Landon Donovan. There are a lot of great passers, like Benny Failhaber, through ball artist. He hit it with the instep. He didn't hit it with the outside of his boot. Sasha Kljestan could hit the through balls with the outside of his boot, but he wasn't doing it at a full sprint. And I love Sasha, but his full sprint was not Kate Cowell's full sprint. Like this pass complete, like, it's very rare that you see one play that forces you to completely reconceptualize what you think a player is capable of. Having this pass in your repertoire, it just completely erases what I thought was Cade Cowell's ceiling. Like, it's an incredible pass. It's a Kevin De Bruyne level pass, and it won the game
for
San Jose.
Yeah.
I love the pass.
I think Doyle's got a best 11 of players this pass does and does not remind him of as well. A lot of name drops in there.
But I think you're right. And the other thing, too, if you look at the goal, too, because I'd seen him play here and there and in those moments, and you see the first thing that stands out is, you know, the guy does not look 17. He's an incredible athlete, right? And he looks very mature and he's fast, but he's super fast. And at times it seems like he would either, like, you know, crush a ball. He can strike a great ball and he was dangerous. But what he showed in the pass, trademark by Doyle, as well as the goal too, was that little bit of composure too in the box, where for young players especially in the box, things moved very fast, right? And you have to have a sense of what's around you. It's all coming around you really quickly. And going against experienced defenders, and it was not one feint, and then the second one, and just that extra little bit of pause to set it up on his left foot and then curl it in. So I think, as you were sort of reimagining what he could be, I think it was actually both plays that stood out to say that. And that happens with 17-year-olds, right? Like, you don't really know.
Hope, right?
I remember I was talking to Luchi Gonzalez, and I was like, how do you know when a guy is ready to play? I was talking about Ricardo Pepi, who got a goal this week, too, off the bench. And he was like, you kind of don't. You just have to try it and let him play, and then you figure it out, and maybe you discover and learn something new. It sounds like the Quakes have known a little bit for a while from some of the comments around Cal, but you're seeing it in action now.
Two straight starts. Mateus Almeida trusting a 17-year-old, trusting the youngest starter in MLS to go out and do the job, and he went out and did it. Gianluca Busio has been trusted a lot of different places by Peter Vermees.
Ricardo Pepi scored in that game.
So we said that.
And I'm just going to say this real quick, because I know the Quakes people will yell at me if I don't. The huge thing for the Quakes here was they got a really good win without Judson playing in central midfield, which I think a lot of people thought was going to be impossible for them this year. So just getting that performance out of Remedy, Judson's still going to be the starter there when he's 100% fit. But this was a big 90-minute win for San Jose.
Man, no, and he was back on the bench, so that's positive.
I mean, he came in at the end and played a little bit at right back, but the Quakes are much better than people have given them credit for.
And they love Judson. There is no doubt about that. There is no fan base that loves their defensive midfielder and stands for him more than Quakes fans. And Judson, Gianluca Busio started at the 9. He got moved back in the second half when Pulido came on to more of a 10. Sporting Kansas City tied 1-1 with Orlando City. Props to the referee crew on this one. They had a couple difficult, I think three different offside plays to make calls on, and I got them all right. So that's what you want from them as well from the video review process. Nice little backheel goal from Nani. Orlando City were the better team. Sporting Kansas City is still incomplete, but the flip side is Minnesota's incomplete, has two losses. Sporting Kansas City are incomplete and are just sort of weathering that storm. What'd you see from Busio in this game, guys? Who had sort of a strong take on that? The goal was really nice. He set it up well, went near post. Fooled Gallese, which I don't think I wouldn't have seen that coming, to be honest. But he's not a nine. He's not a nine.
No. I didn't watch this game in real time on Friday night. I was out with some friends having some drinks, and I was getting nothing but Busio slander texted to me from Anders. So that's my take on the first half.
Wow. Anders.
Impossible. He doesn't affect the game at all. He can't find anything. Then he scores at the end of the first half. And then apparently in the second half, he moves to the number 10 and he's much better. Of course, Pulido being in there as the nine has a lot to do with that.
Our guy, Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert's reporting that Kansas City has already rejected a couple offers from Serie A teams for Gianluca Busio, who's 18, one of the youngest starters in MLS at this point as well. Where do you think he settles in this team? They have a lot of options. I wondered where he would get playing time, especially if Gadi Kinda needs to be on the field at all times, and he would be a number 10 as well in this situation. And then you have a lot of guys, you know, with big experience at the 6 and the 8, and right now it looks like Roger and Remy are going to be those two guys. Like, where does Gianluca Busio, if you want to sell him, if you want to give him the playing time that he needs, but also he can affect your team well, where does he play for this team when they're full strength, when Johnny Russell's back, when Polito is back? Is it at the 10?
Well, I think there's two things. One is he's a young player and you want to get him on the field. So he's going to play every position, I think, the rest of this year. Like, he is the piece that whenever anyone's missing or whenever you need to fill in, he gets the opportunity. But I don't know that Kinda's locked in. I understand he was a big signing. Was messy in this game in big moments where he could have helped set them into that final third or helped trap the ball over the top and start the attack. I thought he struggled in this one. I enjoy watching him play, but he's not a pure chance creator as well. So I think between him and Roger, there's minutes to be had in midfield because you've got a lot of different pieces that can sort of do similar things. And so they can help each other. It doesn't have to be, well, we need this pure guy, Roger, because of what he can purely do, or Kinda as well. So I think there's a ton of minutes in that rotation in those midfield three.
Daniel Shalvey assist. Just want to throw it out there. Since you got on the Pepe train, I got to get my Shalvey train here. Can we take anything
What's Daniel Shalvey, like 40 at this point?
No, come on.
He's like the Tommy Thompson hype train.
He's one of the most eligible bachelors in Kansas City,
We used to run the Tommy Thompson hype train when he had like a shot in the field because he couldn't get a shot on goal for like 4.5 years.
Don't bring that up. Anything to take from LAFC Seattle? I really pumped that one up. But a lot of guys out. No Vela, no Rossi, no Ladero.
They went with Cifuentes off the jump, right?
Yeah, that was
interesting. That was a new one. Bob's having fun out
there. I mean, given the guys who were missing, it kind of expected it to not necessarily live up, and it didn't. Like, these are two of the best teams in the West, though. The Sounders look, I think, much better than we all expected without Nico Ladero. Like, in the past 5 years, if they haven't had Ladero, they've been helpless. That is not the case anymore. LAFC missing their entire starting front line. They're starting right back. They went out there, and I thought they played pretty good soccer. But both teams have to play better, and I think both teams will play better.
Teams that have something to be worried about. FC Cincinnati, 5 set-piece goals, 5-0 loss in the Bronx. Yeah, that's not going to do it.
$17 million on their attack, and I get it. They didn't spend a lot upgrading their defense that has been very poor for 2 years.
Yeah, not much more to say about that. Chicago Fire or the Chicago Fire?
The only thing I'll say about the 5 set piece, because I've seen a lot of people talking about it, it shows some inexperience too, because you go to NYCFC and you know that the pitch is small. There's going to, like, getting fouls in bad positions is going to cause problems, of course, right? Trying to play out. We see teams struggle. It's a unique challenge playing there. And it was set piece after set piece after set piece. It was every different type of mistake you can make on a set piece. It was down to, like, the wall was set wrong.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
The zone versus man was not in sync. And then really at a certain point when it gets to 3, 4, 5, it becomes about competing, right? And having a little bit of pride to say, we've given up 3 set pieces, no mas. And that wasn't there either. So, I thought Cincinnati looked good in the first week, and this was a big setback. I don't know. That was concerning to me, but a little bit of, I think, a little naive and inexperienced to know that you're going to a venue like that, and it does have to change the way you play.
It's a roller coaster, I think, for this year for Cincinnati. They go up the hill. They're enjoying it. It's good. Where are we going to go? We got a draw in week one. Brenner and Lucho score, and boom, straight down. Straight down. All right.
In fairness, the last 30 minutes against Nashville, the set was already starting.
That's true. They were already starting.
The last 70 minutes.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, boy. Oh, Chicago Fire remain the Chicago Fire. They look good, and they give up bad goals. That's just the way it goes for them. We'll talk about Atlanta more in just a second.
I guess that's just a thing we're just going to keep saying.
I mean, if they keep doing it, I don't know.
Jonathan Bornstein post-game was like, yeah, I don't know. We're like... It's just shocking. It is still shocking every time to me, because at times they play great soccer and they know who they are and they know what they're doing. And this one, I think, was a lot on Shuttleworth. Both of them, right? They lost 3-1. Two of them were pretty bad from him. So I don't know that it's on the whole team making mistakes, but they hit the post twice.
Look at the buildup to that second goal.
Yeah.
There's never any pressure to the ball anywhere. Anywhere. Like, yeah, Shuttleworth, he biffed it. He should have done a lot better. But if you're letting a team with, you know, $40 million worth of attackers out there just ping passes around and you're not going to get within 5 yards of them, you're putting your team, they are week after week after week. This is what we see from the Fire.
Who has the most to be happy about? Montreal, they're atop the East, 4 points from two games. Expected goals would not have them atop the East. Nashville just beat down the door once again. I thought you summed this up well in your column, Doyle, and that, look, it's not what they wanted from two games, but they are creating so many more chances. Those chances are really good. At some point here, I think it's going to go better for them. Now, I would also advise anybody playing the Impact to take away Mason Toy's right foot instead of letting him go for the curler with that perfect angle outside the box. So let that be a lesson to future defenders.
I think it's a little harsh to say a guy 30 yards out falling back is at a perfect angle to hit a shot.
I'm not saying it's a perfect angle. It's the angle that he has repeatedly scored goals from.
Okay.
Repeatedly. Okay. Not just in week one. When he was on his heater too, that was like his vintage goal.
Yeah, but he had that left-footed one against LAFC that was utterly spectacular.
Well, maybe, you know what?
Take away both feet. How about that?
Yeah, maybe the heater he's on right now. We'll see if it keeps going for Montreal. I also think Vancouver have a lot to be happy about. 4 points, two quality results. Good for them.
Oh, should have been a win. I know. Did you see Bono's save?
I know.
Raposo comes off the bench, presses the crap out of everyone.
Well, and also, Osorio's goal is just so bizarre and strange in itself. Like, yeah. Either way, Montreal or Vancouver got to be happy. Let's talk about Toronto. Let's talk about all these teams in CONCACAF Champions League before we get out of here. Tuesday and Wednesday. On Tuesday, Atlanta, Philly in Atlanta on FS1, 2 day in. That's at 7 p.m. Central Time, so 8 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern. Toronto, Cruz Azul, also FS1, 2 day in. All these games are on the Fox family. The only one that's FS2 is Columbus, Monterey on Wednesday. That's the early game at 8:30, and then at 10:30, Portland, Club America. Jefferson Soteldo, Dave, Toronto making a big, big statement with their third DP. Yeah. This is huge. You teased it. I'll let you have it.
Well, it's just a little funny because it's the player that Greg Vanney's been waiting for 7 years, and then he left, and they finally signed him. He's a legit chance creator off the wing. I assume he'll take over the role that Schaffelberg's had, which is an upgrade. Is that a fair terminology to use there?
Yeah,
that's fair. He's shorter than Javinko. We got that a lot in the mailbag. The new Atomic Ant coming to Toronto. And as I said last show when we talked about it, he can score himself. He can create opportunities. He's deadly in transition. When you give him space, if he gets isolated 1v1, he can create himself going both ways, coming inside and shooting or getting to the end line.
That's his thing. Those 1v1s, yeah. He is just deadly off the dribble. The two issues here. First of all, like you said, Greg Vanney has been waiting for this. Was waiting for this player for like 6-7 years, because he's perfect in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. Chris Armas has been playing a 4-4-2.
Yeah,
week after week after week. That's one. That's two. Or number two is that Chris Armas has been pressing. Like, he has had that team out there trying to define itself via their pressure, which I get. Soteldo's not going to defend. He's just not that guy. So I get the signing because he's a really good player, and anytime you get a chance to sign a really good player, you know if the money's right, then you probably make the deal. It's a weird fit. It is a weird fit from what we've seen of Chris Armas teams in the past and what we think Chris Armas wants his team to be in the future.
So the only thing I'll say about that is on the 4-4-2, it seems like, and that's why I brought up Schaffelberg, Aro is a more stay-at-home player, and there's width on the left side for that second, that winger, whatever you want to call it, where Richie gives it on the right side, and Delgado or Osorio kind of rotates in as a third central midfielder in those places. And then you also have, right now, you don't know what your health is up top. So maybe he plays where that Pasuelo, Nobel Akello, whatever spot it is in that. But I think it'll fit in okay. The pressing will be interesting, but that's kind of your expectation from your coaches if you create a culture around it. that'll bring it. But I will say, and you say, you know, it's a good player. Santos is in trouble, and this is those moments we talked about a little bit with surprisingly FC Cincinnati of like seeing the whole world stage and where is there an opportunity? And you're looking at a club in Brazil that's struggling right now, and there's a chance to get a guy that maybe TFC wasn't going to get. And we saw with Boré, like, it's just there might be an opening there. Let's get in this conversation and see what happens. And now you get a player that a lot of the reaction is like, oh, I thought his next move was going to be to X top five league in Europe. And instead it's the TFC, which is huge. And I give credit to Ali Curtis and his group to just understand what's going on, understand the environment and staying involved until they get it done.
By the way, Santos has announced this one, but Toronto FC haven't. So it's not official, but it's feeling, I'll say semi-official, let's say. Let's get into the weeds on these CCL games before we get out of here. We'll start with Atlanta, Philly. And Doyle, you had some thoughts on the way Atlanta played this weekend. How do you see this particular matchup coming up on Tuesday?
Yeah, defensively, it was a little weird from Atlanta. If you looked at their pressure against Chicago, it's almost all coming up the middle. Like Emerson Hyndman covered a ton of ground and got pressure to the ball all the time. And he, you know, he's playing in central midfield with Sosa and Barco. And Sosa and Barco were like second and third or second and fourth on the list. Lisandro Lopez, who was started at center forward, he got pressure to the ball a ton as well. It's weird. It's a weird distribution of where you're getting pressure to the ball. Usually you see a couple of wingers sneak in there as well, especially for a team that plays a 4-2-3-1 or, you know, 4-1-4-1, I guess more for what we've seen from Atlanta. I don't know how that's going to work against the Diamond. I know that you want to blow the Diamond apart. I know that you want to make it a wide diamond because once you stretch it out like that, it's easier to get the ball to folks in half spaces. I'm kind of fascinated by this. I was thinking before this weekend that Philly were pretty clear favorites, but then Philly weren't great. And Atlanta played probably their best 90 minutes of the year. They looked like, remember that first 30 minutes they had against Alajuelense where they looked really, really good. And then they got the red card and obviously everything changed. It was like those 30 minutes. That's what we got for about 70 against the Fire. They play like that against Philadelphia. I'm not going to call them favorites, but this series is a toss-up.
I'm hoping
the stuff that drives you nuts in the attack with Atlanta, though, still drives you nuts.
Yep.
Like, you watch them play, and it's Barco in space. It's Moreno out wide. Neither of them either have the right decision at the end or want to even take the opportunity. And then it's like, if Jake Mulrooney's going to try it, it works out for them because no one else is a lot of times. And so even when they're good, and then Hyndman as well.
Jake Mulvaney, we got to get the man's name right after that dribble that he had.
I mean, you got to get it in there. Got to get the sound because that's prime Ajax Zlatan there. I mean, he took the whole damn
that's
team
what we're
on.
Saying?
Okay. Anyway, I'm hoping that delivery for Kalen is four MLS teams in the semifinals. Probably not going to get that. You have three Liga MX sides that are the 1, 2, and 4 right now in the table in Mexico: Cruz Azul, Monterrey, and America. America lost for the first time in a long time this weekend to Toluca. So, hey, that's a good sign for the Timbers. And the Timbers look pretty good. They beat Houston Dynamo this weekend. And
Timbers, too, played well.
Fine. Rest
literally,
them up.
Timbers.
Yeah. Rest them up. Rest them up. Show your depth off. Who do you think has the best chance of getting through? Toronto, Columbus, or Portland?
Columbus.
Yeah, we still all think it's Columbus, right?
Yeah. From both sides, right? Monterrey, I think, have the most deficiencies from a Liga MX side and the most opportunity. And then Columbus is the deepest team and they're the MLS Cup reigning champion. So they're still the favorites. I still feel that there's a good opening for Portland to sit deep and absorb pressure and hit on the counter. I'd feel better about it if Jeremy Abobasi was healthy and had been playing the last few weeks to be that center forward. But I still feel pretty good about them. I think one of the big question marks for me with them is defending from those fullbacks. And so if you sit in deep, are they tracking runners? And if Club America is able to start to set up some triangle and start knocking around the edge of the boxes, I do worry about both of them. But at the same time, Van Rinken is a Liga MX veteran. And this is why you bring a player like that in, to understand this opponent and understand this moment.
I like Portland. I'm the game I'm most interested to watch is the Portland America match. That's the one I think I'll be watching the closest. And, you know, Portland also, and I think against Maratone, looked like incredible to me in the last round. So I like that Yimi Chara's firing, Dyren Asprilla. Will he not start? He got another goal again this weekend. Looked confident. And then I think they're solid in the back. Zuperich was rested on the weekend. I think he came in to the match. Same with Eric Williamson. So they're going to be fresh.
Yeah, Eric Williamson looked kind of awesome off the wing. Like, let him do whatever he wants, and then the game's really fun for him. Sorry, yeah,
I know America's a big side, but I think there might be something in this for Portland still.
Let's be honest with ourselves. How many do we really see getting through?
Here, like, we go.
I know I've been the wet blanket, but, and I'm not trying to be here. I'm just trying to ask a very, you know, the pertinent question for MLS teams, for every team in this competition. Who's going to advance? How many do we see getting through? We have one. We know an MLS team's getting through Atlanta, Philly. So you got one. How high would you go realistically into the
semifinals? I feel comfortable saying two. I'd be very excited if it was three. But it's hard to see Portland or TFC. And for TFC, I thought it was an okay game against Vancouver. It was two set piece goals that they gave up. And you saw, as more players getting healthy, Osorio comes back in. And Parisso didn't start this one, but they said on the broadcast that if it was the big CCL game, he would have been okay to play. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in there. Toronto feels like they're still a step away from that just because of the injuries and all that. But they were able to do it against Lyon, which I don't think that this is that much different of a matchup. At the same time, they gave up like 80 big chances against Lyon and no one could finish. So basically, that's my way of saying I have no idea.
I'd take two every single day of the week. We'll see what we get. Knife between the teeth, boys. Go out and get some results in the region for us, all right? FS1 and FS2 to the end as well. Tuesday and Wednesday, Doyle, are you going to do spaces? What are you thinking on that?
I'm thinking it's pretty late, man.
Well, if you're up late, maybe we'll see. Goodness. Look, if Toronto beat Cruz Azul, if Portland
I'm
beat
sure
America, then that will probably take that decision out of your hands. Watch Matt Doyle 76 on Twitter to see if that spaces pops up on your Twitter app. All right. Dave, let's get into the mailbag. What do we got?
So we got a lot of Canada love right now. Obviously, Toronto Duck Jack for the second Atomic Ant coming in, as we talked about. And then we've got a fan who said, really enjoyed watching CFM, which is Club de Foot Montreal. The team setup is such that when every player plays within themselves, the style, thought, movement is achievable and the team succeeds. There are also lots of fun when any given player decides to play outside of themselves. Finally, let the record show that I had a positive feeling when Hurtado came on. I could only think of his ridiculous lob goal last year when seeing Jordy making the wide open run. I could hear Hurtado's inner monologue saying, layups are so cliche.
I mean, this is a great start for Club de Foot Montreal. And for Wilfred Nancy, I mean, this is we talk about belief a lot on this show because it's still early and teams are finding out who they are. But, you know, Dave, you had said over and over in preseason that if a team tries hard in MLS, there's an equalizer there. And this team, at the very least, looks like they're going to play for each other. So I think that's something that the people in Montreal will get behind.
It's not just that, like, which it clearly is that, let me just say. But they're playing a very like nobody's out of position. Everybody's playing in what is clearly their best position or something close to it. And so I think it's made the ability – it's just made
everyone?
It easier. Almost everyone, right?
Your guy, Mihailovic.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's better as a playmaking left wing, but he's been good through two games as this sort of like kind of number 10. And he, like, look, he is the best chance creator on that team. So you want him in that position. He's a DP now as well. So you kind of want him in that position where he's getting all over the ball in the final third. So I think that has made it easier for Montreal to get on the same page. But they do have to start, like, they're not going to score two bangers every game. They have to start generating stuff that's a little bit more repeatable. And they have to figure out how to tighten up defensively because, oh boy. They were holding on for dear life.
Yeah, there's some survival going on there. I think Nashville had three expected goals, and Montreal had 0.6.
Yeah, and like Yonder Cadiz and Hani Mukhtar, they both scored, but they both could have had two or three. Like, this was like exactly what we talked about with Nashville. Is like, this team can be really good, but a lot of that depends on how good their DPs are going to be. And so far, they've been okay.
Randall Leal's been pretty good. That guy's pretty good at soccer. David Neskoki said, I was going to comment earlier in the year and say that Wiebe shouldn't ever promise to drink Malort, no matter how remote the possibility that the Fire would make the playoffs. But I think it's clear that he won't be doing any such self-harm this season over the course of the first 2 weeks.
I signed on for pain, baby. pain. I decided that I was going to put my heart behind the Fire because I wanted it to be better, knowing that it very well could possibly
or
not
the
be
opposite,
better.
Which is you have no belief in them.
Oh, that he wouldn't have to drink the Malort? I'm good with drinking the Malort. That's fine. I can do that. I mean, I'll do that quicker than they'll defend a lead in the last 15 minutes. So we'll be good. I don't think I'm going to have to drink it anyway, but it's rough times for Fire fans. I don't envy what they're experiencing at the end of games right now and last year.
So
as well.
Rafael Wicki, his team's manager, only made one sub this weekend. The team still have five subs because of everything that's gone on around the world. He wanted to know which team you think has the biggest advantage by having that. Also, why are they only making one sub?
Huh.
That's interesting. I mean, you would think it would be teams that are going to exert a lot physically, especially in the summer months and into the second half of the season. I think they're probably less of an advantage right now than there will be when the games come thicker and faster and the conditions get more difficult to play in. Kaylin, I would be curious what you think here. As a player, knowing that there are five subs available, whether you're a starter or a bench player or a coach, how does that change the way people start to think about roles on a team, if at all?
Well, it's interesting because you still do see some coaches not using even their three. And you go through and it's like I think when this rule came out, people were saying like, oh, this was going to fundamentally change the way you know, games are managed. You can be subbing people in at halftime. Really hasn't happened that way. It's really stayed pretty much true to form. It does give you a little bit. And I think the other thing is due to the longer off season right now, when I'm watching games, I'm still seeing a lot of players cramping, going down, you know, even the players that are hitting like Chicharito are not in full match shape yet. And some coaches have been really honest about that. DC United's head coach, same with Inter Miami. There's been a bunch of managers that have come out and said, so I think early in season, it makes more sense to rotate. Obviously for the clubs that are playing in Champions League, but I don't think it's going to change that much overall as far as the way teams are managed, mainly because managers don't trust everybody on the bench or don't trust everybody in every situation yet. Coaches I've seen do it well. I think Greg Vanney's done it really well. In the first match against Inter Miami, I felt like that made the difference. Sasha Kljestan comes on, gets a goal. Dunbar has been good. He's trusted the young players, Efra Alvarez, all these guys coming Saldana. On in the last match, Saldana to do well. So it can make a difference in points on the table if you use it correctly. And I think coaches should probably look to it, especially earlier on in the season. But some coaches, it's hard to change.
So we've got an essay from an FC Cincinnati fan.
Can we distill it into the hypothesis? I don't need the full essay because I have a pretty good feeling what that essay might say.
I don't know. There's so much emotion behind it. It feels so harsh. So Trump, Ken Hodaker, shout out to him, basically saying it feels like expansion year three. He said Nijnkamp went out and addressed the offense during the winter window, and it feels like he overcorrected. In my opinion, biggest issue is the club defensively. Last year, center backs lacked speed and ability to pass out the back to put their opponents on their heel. Nijnkamp removed Waston, Garza, and Duplaine. All these were the right decision, but did little to provide replacements outside of Matarrita. I pray Vallecilla helps, but he's only 21. Low expectations for a player on loan. Matarrita's a nice pickup for an outside back going forward, but not helping much defensively. He then goes in, breaks down the rest of it. Basically, Jojo's a winger starting at right back. Hagelin and Pedersen not good enough to start at center back, and now they're in year three of this, is what it feels like.
But Yuya Kubo and Matocho as that dual pivot central midfield.
So there you go. He finished out with this. Brenner had 28 touches against Nashville and 18 touches versus NYCFC. How are we getting our star striker that few opportunities? So all of that.
I mean, it does feel like an overcorrection on their part as far as the attack goes. Not because you don't want to see them make those moves, but because they didn't have sort of commensurate attention to the back line. I mean, they could have just looked at Minnesota, who had a similar two-year span to start it, and said, okay, well, what did Minnesota do? Minnesota went out and got MLS experienced top of the line D mid center backs and just said, we are going to be harder to break down. And in being harder to break down, we're going to automatically be a better team and have ridden that to this point. And then added those investment pieces in Reynoso and Henao and whoever, you know, Fragapane, if that happens, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, it's not great.
Wouldn't Cincinnati fans say that they tried to do that by getting Kendall Waston at the start and then they went out and they signed Harris Madunia?
Yeah, that's true. He's a best 11 player and Harris was, you know, extremely well regarded in the moment that they went out and got him. But I don't think you would say Harris Madunia was a defensive presence. And certainly even Kendall Waston, you would say like he dominant at times, but also a wild card defensively. Not exactly.
But this is what I was talking about last year with their acquisitions. Like, okay, if you have Harris Madunia as your six, then you need two energetic ball winning box to box midfielders around him. If you're going to play a 4-3-3, which you should have, they had Amaya and Alan Cruz. Alan Cruz like immediately went into the doghouse, and Amaya eventually wanted out. And we never saw what would have been a natural setup for them. And so it just doesn't feel like there's ever been a plan with FC Cincinnati. And I'm glad they're being ambitious with their signings, but they need to be smart with some signings too.
Let me close you guys on this. Chase in Oregon, shutting down the voting already, says, should we just give Barco the Goal of the Year award now? Atlanta fans will just flood the vote for their boy regardless of merit. Don't get me wrong, the goal was a certified banger, but there will surely be some better goals scored over the course of the season. I'm sure Anders and me could agree on one, and he's from Oregon.
There already have been better goals scored. So, like, everybody confuses goal of the year or goal of the week with finish of the week. It's a great finish. It's a great strike. The best goal that we've seen this year is that first fire goal against New England. Tiki Tok, like, it just
hit the pass.
That pass.
Wow, you're going to put that over Cade Cowell right now?
Yeah.
You had a religious experience earlier in the show. Like, you went into convulsions. I mean, you were just like, soccer gods are speaking to you through Cade Cowell.
Like, passing the ball is the essence of the game. The ball is the only thing that connects all the players on the field. And we saw that in that fire goal. We've seen so many wonderful goals. It's more than just some dude hitting a banger. But hey, goal of the week, goal of the year.
I'm down for bangers, but I would still take Jao Paulo's over Barco's.
Easy. Look, we had compared him to Gonzalo.
It's just a remake of last year's goal of the year. That's all it is. It's a remake.
Okay, Pep Guardiola. By the way, I just want to throw out there, between Gutman and Smith, Brad Smith, we had two Chrome Dome goals this weekend. So between that and then all the comparisons to the Higuain brothers, this is a good time for... It's not completely chrome. I appreciate you guys. All right, we're out of here. Let us know what you think of week two. We'll be around to talk about CCL on Thursday and preview the weekend with Charlie Davies. And there's a Club and Country podcast coming out this week. We're talking number 9 depth chart for the U.S. men's national team. Interview with Richie Larea. Dave's Canadian best 11.
John Herdman's.
Well, you guys mind melded on it, so it's basically...
Don't put that evil on
it's
me.
It's basically both of you. And then Taylor Rockwell from Total Soccer Show stops by to talk about the best season in Europe for an American in 2021. Check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. It'll come right through your feed. In the meantime, have a great week, everybody.